so that you guys have maximum time to hear from and talk to Susan. Welcome to the Drawing Center. I'm Nina Cacciadorian. I'm the viewing program curator. I run the program here for emerging artists, and this show that's up right now called Day Job is a show that I've curated, inspired by the fact that so many of us who are artists also have day jobs, and with all the attendant realities of that life that we juggle, I thought it would be nice to do some public programs as part of the show that really dealt with some very nuts and bolts issues. So we did an event a few weeks ago that had to do with legal issues around art and art making and artists' lives, and tonight I'm really happy to have Susan here to talk about money, which is often a scary subject and one that has intricacies that are helpful to have explained. Susan Lee is a tax preparer who has worked with freelancers and artists for over 20 years. She's also a certified financial planner and has spoken on tax issues facing artists at many, many different organizations, Graphic Artists Guild, Artists in the Marketplace, Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, Columbia, School of Visual Arts, Center for Book Arts quite recently, NYFA, and now here. Susan has a weekly personal holistic financial radio show on WBAI and also has a really great website that I highly recommend visiting called www.freelancetaxation.com, where a lot of the things that she'll make reference to can be revisited. I'm also going to be projecting on occasion some images here that come from a PDF that some of you who RSVP'd may have already downloaded and looked at. If you want to download it and look at it later, it's on our site. You can grab it from there. And thanks for making that available for us. I also want to mention that Susan is an avid collector of 16th century Flemish landscape prints and also my own accountant. So I can't say anything better by way of endorsing what you know than the fact that she's been doing my taxes for years and knows her way around all this stuff really, really well. So thanks for being here. I'll turn this over to you.
Hi, can you all hear? Is this okay? Before I start, I just want to talk about the Drawing Center just for a bit. I've lived in this neighborhood since 1968, and when this neighborhood was not as disgusting and revolting, the Drawing Center was still one of the places I came to. So I would like you, I mean, I love the Drawing Center. That's why, among other reasons, I said yes to Nina. I would like you to sort of give a round of applause. I want to say some names. You know, who were the most underappreciated people in the art world? It's the people who keep the nonprofits together. It's the people who provide the services for you all. Some of you work in them, and the rest of you benefit from them. So I want to give a round of applause to Brett, to Anna, to Emily, to Brandon, certainly to Nina, and to Chris. So just give them a round of applause. Because I'm a drawing addict, what can I say? You know, show me a Bruegel. I don't care whether it's in Rotterdam or in New York. Of course, we don't have any Bruegels in this country, but we won't go there. Anyway, okay, so I have an agenda, and I promise it's not to make you into an accountant, okay? My agenda is that if you walk out of here thinking that money is not over here and life over here, I will have accomplished something. Is there anybody here who doesn't know what a DNA strand looks like? You know, it's those things wrapping around. Okay, you got it? Money and art, your life, are all these strands that are intricately wound up together. And for too many people, my mother was an artist, a commercial artist to be sure, a designer. Money was over here, life was over here. There was a denial about it. There were terrible, terrible habits about it. And so, I mean, she didn't file her taxes, okay? You know, so it's my karma to file endless taxes to make up for my mother. You laugh, but anyway, it was true. So you each have your own whatevers about this. But tonight is not going to be me going over a Schedule C, line by line. Why? Because I was told in high school I wasn't going to graduate from high school. I wasn't going to get to college. Because I read books in class. I read novels. I became a writer. What else should I do in class? Listen? So my assumption tonight is that each of you have my boredom threshold. Infinitesimal. So I... I don't care what you do. I don't care if you sit. I would call it doodling. You would call it drawing. Because when you do it, it's magic. When I do it, it's the same design over and over and over again. Whatever it is, if you can listen to a few words, that's enough. So don't expect that you're going to learn how to do a tax form. This is like a language that many of you have begun the journey to learning. I mean, I lived in Paris for over 10 years, for half a year. I still can't do the subjunctive, the conditional. I'd practice il faut que je fasse. So privately, I could never do it in a conversation with a French person. So the issues about money is not that you should become an expert in it, but that you have to get, I believe, some familiarity, and particularly with taxes. And so, on my website is all this stuff. And I post new articles every year because I only write now one a year. But if you can read them, I'll go through some of them. Now, questions. I don't know about you, but there's nothing more boring than somebody who talks for an hour and a half. Anyone disagree? So, what I would suggest, now, when I spoke at NYFA once, there was a rebellion. Somebody had the temerity to raise their hand, and that person got jumped. No, no, no. It's up to you. If you want to ask questions and the rest of you say okay to that, it's fine with me. If not, we can have questions at the end. Me personally, I think the same information gets out because there really isn't an infinite amount of questions. So it's up to you. I just think that for those of you who are so scared by the subject of money, and I'm not going to ask here who you are, because I know that given this economy, or I could ask another question. Is anyone having a good year? Huh? Okay. Nobody raised their hands. I'm not going to embarrass anybody by saying, did anyone have a bad year? I personally think we're in the worst economy of my lifetime. I personally think that the exercise I'm going to have you do, and I'm going to have you do it for a variety of reasons, is because the promise of having an easy life is over. I'm a lefty. Anyone here not know what WBAI is? I'm not on BAI at the moment, but I expect to be back. We're in a mess economically. And they just appointed a banker as chief of staff, so you know it's not going to get better. There is nobody here for whom, anyone here who believes that making money is what they're put on life for, on earth for, okay? Each of you are here because you have a dream, and that's to make something that knocks the socks off you. Of course, Thomas Mann said that if you love the sentence, erase it, but that's another issue. But that's what you're here for. I flunked Ivory Soap. You know what Ivory Soap was? Do any of you remember being given a bar of soap and sculpting? You probably did well at it. I flunked. So you do magic things. Okay? That's my attitude about this. So, for those of you who have the packet, does everyone here have a copy of this thing? Okay. Could you put up the goals thing? Okay. So, I have an exercise for you. This is not a test. I am not going to ask you to do readings from it. This is between you, and if you have a mate, I've never had a PowerPoint before. This is exciting. There are three things. What do I want? What will I do? What do I need to do? This is honesty. And the time period, we're going to do this for 5 minutes. And it's a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years, old age. It's mine, yours, ours. Ours are for those of you who are with somebody. That's like known as having a partner. And there, I had two people in yesterday who have had wonderful years in terms of income. Their income collapsed. And when I said, I think the toughest part about this is in your relationship, am I right? And I don't know you. You know, I don't know them socially, but I know this is what this universe is causing. So it seems to me that if you can begin to talk to your partner about your feelings about what's going on, and may I recommend a book? It's called For Richer or Poorer by Ruth Hayden. She's a financial educator, as white bread as they come from God knows where in the Middle West, God knows. And she's written all kinds of books, and she's terrific. She's been on my show for years. For Richer or Poorer, it will get you able to talk. Well, I don't know, able. It gives you the structure to talk to your partners about money. And that's as hard as it comes to do. I understand that. Anyway, so for 5 minutes, what do I want? You're going to say, are these business goals, are these art goals, are these life goals? They're whatever you want goals. Do whatever you want. You know. And what do I want? You know what that means. What will I do? You know what that means. It's like, I have to do my taxes. Oh, I'll think about it. That's what I will do. And then do, what do I need to do? And this is something that, do it tonight. If you have somebody at home, take it home, have them do it. And that's, what are your goals? What are my goals? What are our goals? And talk about it. And so let's give it 5 minutes. Is that all right? Anyone have any questions? No. Well, yes, you can have mine. I have already, I know what it looks like. Thank you. You all have your lives straightened out? You know exactly what you want? Okay.
I was just reading an article somebody from Sotheby's sent me about, you know, that Alma Tadema, however you pronounce his name, that 19th century guy, the schlock guy, the kitsch guy that got so much money for the painting. I shrieked when I learned it, so she sent it to me. Anyway, money. Okay, if you download this thing, there's this packet. It's also on my website. There's an article on how to manage your finances. Look, the reality of many of you is that, does this define your life? A roller coaster? I see some smiles. You know, if you had your tenured job teaching at the university of je ne sais quoi, your income would be like this, and you would make maybe a little bit or more than that, and it wouldn't matter. So for those of you who are full professors who got these teaching jobs early, then you're in a certain way, as long as they keep tenure, which is another issue. But for many of you, it's like this. So really what it's all about is managing your cash flow. Anybody here not know what I mean about cash flow? Say, how do you do it? You have to pay attention. I don't know how many of you have ever been to a Debtors Anonymous meeting. I went to about 40 of them once. I was going to write a book about it, and I finally didn't. But the 12-step program is a wonderful program if you can get over some of the, you know, 12 steps. But anyway, once you can get past some of them, it's a wonderful program. And if you have money troubles, I really recommend going and sitting. Why? Because it's sort of like Weight Watchers. And it doesn't cost as much. And it's because it's paying attention to the subject. And how do they have you pay attention to the subject? They have you write down every single dollar, penny you spend. Now, what does this do? Besides that you think it might give you herpes of the soul, what it does is it brings consciousness. And the reality for most of us is that we don't want to be conscious of this. Whether there's shame attached to it. I was on the phone with somebody who's out of work, and she's really incredibly ashamed, like it's her fault, you know, that capitalism is cracking, and that they did disgusting things, so it cracked even more and faster, and that we had Bush, and now we have these other whatevers. You know, it's not her fault, but she got leukemia from it, I believe. So if you're conscious of what's coming in, and conscious of what's going out, you can then see how much, in fact, you spend. And you can see if you have any control over some of the items. And to me, since the roller coaster of income is such, the trick is to keep the spending down. Now, I'm a Grinch. My brother, who's 3.5 years older than I am, has been telling me my whole life that I'm Silas Marner. My brother hasn't seen a dollar he can't spend 10 of. Now, he's like my mother. I'm not. That's how it is. You get to choose which one you want to be, my brother or me. He's bald. I'm not. You get a choice. It runs among the men in my family. What can I say? My brother's charming. He is what he is. But that's what he does. I believe that the spending like that leads to suffering unless you have a lot of money. I believe that in this world, you know, most of us went to school, you know, we read Dionysian, we read Apollonian. Now, I have a question. How many people in this room can make their best art, can concentrate the most when they're 3 months behind in rent? How many people, if they know they're going to be evicted, can get up and say, gee, I think I'll make something beautiful today? So that's an argument for the Apollonian side, okay? And that is getting some sort of balance about this whole affair. Now, am I saying that you should put on a hair shirt? No. What I'm saying is if there's not enough money coming in for what you need to have, in the old days, you know, I've been doing this a long time, so I used to be able to say, go out and make some more. oh God, I've gotten hundreds of applications for my job as an office associate that I have to hire for. So I know going out and making some more now is a little hard. So then the question is, then you got to sort of suck it up on the spending side. Well, most people really think they know what they're spending on, but they don't want to face it. That's why cash flow, being on top of what you really spend, is critical. So how do you really do that? How you do it is you can look at last year's checks and last year's credit cards, and you write down, you know, I'm going to introduce a word now. Now, this really may make some of you nauseous. You ready? Budget. Okay? Anybody going to puke? The bathroom's still back there? Okay. We used to use the word, financial planners used to say, a nice phrase, spending plan. There, isn't that nice? A spending plan's a budget. So what I would recommend, and there should be a budget in this list, and did you post it? And the somewhere in there is a list of personal categories. And somewhere in here, which we'll start talking about later when we start talking about taxes, because we have to get to taxes. Up. You know, we all know the categories of life. And the big ones, okay, these are all personal ones. And the other list is the artist expenses. The big ones you can take out of your checkbook and take out of your credit cards. And you can make conscious decisions. You can look, you can add everything up, see what you spent for a year, and say, how do I want to do this month by month? However, you can do it year by year. You can look at what you spent last year, but you really can't, because for most of you, a lot of the expenditures are cash. And by the way, credit cards is not a category. People tend not to want to break them down because they don't want to look at what they spent. You break it down and you really see what you spent. You see, if you really start doing this, you see that you need a new computer every X amount of years. You see that you have emergencies. Anybody here never had an emergency? Anybody here never had a friend who suddenly calls you up and says, I need $1,000? Anybody here, you know, we all have our life's obligations. Some of you have children. Some of you who have parents who need the money. You start thinking about, what do I need? I need, not want, you know, the Rolling Stones song, right? There are needs, there are wants, and what are your needs? For instance, today somebody was in, a wonderful young man who actually came to me through an office associate who worked for me 1 year, and he's been coming to me for years, and they're talking about getting married, and they're talking about buying property. And when he told me how much he was willing to spend, I wanted to run to the bathroom because I wasn't sure they could carry it if they wanted to have children. And so the thing about money, it's to think about it before it becomes a vise around your neck. It's to think about the projects that you want. How do you do that? You've got to know what you spend. Now, you also have to know what you make. Now, that may sound peculiar, right? Okay, I can just feel some of you say, what does she think we are, idiots? Well, not exactly, but there's a freelance mistake. How many people in here are freelancers? Okay, self-employed. One of the biggest mistakes freelancers make is when somebody asks you how much you make, people respond with their gross. Anybody in here not know the difference between gross and net? Okay? The gross is before business expenses, and it's a lot more than the net. There is a psychological difference between saying I make $60,000 a year and I make 20. I had a photographer in, tax season's barely started and I already have these stories, right? A wonderful young woman whose name is all over, she's a photographer and commercial photographer. She can't make any money at it. So she thinks she's making on whatever she's making, you know, $70,000, she's young. She takes a $14,000 a year loss. Her parents are underwriting her. This is impossible unless her parents are rich, which they are not. So when you think about what you make, it's after expenses, not personal expenses, it's after. And so can you afford whatever it is with that second number in mind? So no, I don't think you're idiots, but I think that a lot of freelancers make that mistake. Okay, everyone clear on that? It's a mindset, you know. And the reason I know this is that I had a client who made a particularly small amount of money, and he wanted to buy an Aeron chair or something. And he got mad at me because I had an Aeron chair. He wanted an Aeron chair. More power to him. They're fabulous. They're comfortable. Mine just broke. I bought another one. I sit in it all day. I mean, you know, I got sciatica when I was young driving a taxi. So I get sciatica if I sit in the wrong kind of chair. That's life. And he said, but I make whatever it was at the time. And I said, but you don't. He said, what are you talking about? I just told you I did. We're filling out my taxes. And I said, let's look at the Schedule C, which all of us are going to do. And he had so much in art expenses that he came out with very little money. And I said, I don't care if you buy 10 Aeron chairs. It's not my business. But the issue is, can you afford it? You've got to make the judgments. And that's what I'm asking you to do, is to be conscious about your needs and your wants. It's, now, some of you, again, I'm not going to ask, but I will bet you that some of you woke up today very depressed. It's got to be, you know? Am I wrong? Do we have a room for, nobody here woke up depressed? So what do a lot of people do when you're depressed? You spend money, right? Anybody here not spend money when they're depressed about something? Good for you. That means then you might have a bank account. Many other people in this room do not. And that I'm sure of too. I mean, they have a bank account with 64 cents in it. Okay, let me tell you about another one of my clients who's an artist. I mean, she used to be my client many, many years ago. And this is an old story. So for those of you who remember I. Miller shoe stores, okay, they used to be not a high-end, but a middle-end shoe store. And shoes cost $90 at I. Miller. And this woman made $120 a week. She would go into I. Miller every week and buy one or two pairs of shoes. She was depressed. She needed some shoes. Well, her life was not a good life as a result of these I. Miller shoes, but she was depressed. So what did she teach herself to do? She taught herself, or she noticed in her purchases, that if she went to, remember Woolworths? Okay, Woolworths. I mean, now you'd go to Kmart or something, or Penny's or something. She noticed if she bought a pair of socks, it would take the edge off her bad mood. Or if she bought a pair of underpants, actually, now you have to buy three in a pack, or whatever it is, it would take the edge off her depression, and so she could go back to making her art. So what I'm saying to you is don't put on a hair shirt. Life is short. I find that one of the things that one can spend money on that's inexpensive are flowers. You know, in the last 30 or 40 years, we have a whole, you know, ethnic that seems to be devoted to corner stores with flowers. Admittedly, the flowers die in 62 minutes. But nonetheless, you can buy one, right? You're really feeling like shit, and you want to go out and buy a brand new whatever that you don't need? Try buying a flower. Try buying something very small that you covet, that, you know, just will make your day, because it's like a homeopathic. It'll just take the edge off the fear, off the bad mood, off the whatever, so that you can go back, get back in balance. How many people here meditate? Oh, come on. We need more than that. I'm telling you, and don't tell me that running is a meditation. You know, getting on the hoopy-doo is a meditation. Forget it. Oh, I play golf. That's like a meditation. Meditation is meditation. if you get scared about money, because I know there are a lot of you in here that are scared about it, I would recommend meditating. It'll help you make your art. It'll help you stay in balance, because some of you do martial arts, you know, whatever form of martial arts, it's all about building up in here. And in meditation, it's all about centering, and it's all about regaining balance. Now, you're going to say, some of you might be thinking, why is she talking about that? We're supposed to be learning line one, line two, and line three of Schedule C. Well, I guarantee you, you won't give a flying fuck about money if you're scared. If you're scared about money, and I think many of you are, that's my premise. And if I'm wrong, tell me, because I can go into cheery and light. But my experience is people are scared now. And I believe that that double helix about money and life includes all of it, all of life, all in money. And if you can face fear about money, it's face fear about a lot of things, about death, about money, you can get up and face it, and then you can do the work that you need to spend properly and make properly. And whatever that is for both, on either side of you, that's your business. I don't pretend to tell you what's correct. I can just say that it's getting on a path that will lead you to the most time and space to make your art, is what I believe. Nobody, look, every single person in this room had something else to do tonight, okay? But talking about money and learning about money will allow you to lead a fuller and better life so that you can make something magic so I can come look at it, okay? And so that's what it is. That's what a budget's about. Now, you might not have thought that's what a budget is about, but that's what it's about. It's so you can make your art better. Now, how do you really do a budget? You do a budget. Now, a budget is a process. It's not concrete. You see what you've spent. You say, oh, God, I shouldn't have, I wouldn't have. Maybe I'll do it better. Then you go back and you readjust it. And just remember, everyone has emergencies. And since I've become such a Grinch, and since I'm so worried that since Obama put Alan Simpson and those other awful Democrats in on that thing, I think they're going after Social Security next. I think they're going after Medicare, Medicaid, you know, the things that human beings fought for 150 years that now are being sliced and diced away. I think, unfortunately, what this means is that I don't care how little you make, you're going to have to start to save. You have to. And so what if I'm wrong? You know, it just means that when you're older, you might have something. I'm 66 years old. This dear friend of mine yesterday, who I adore, was saying she just had to borrow $1,000 because she doesn't have any money. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. So my generation, you know, that boomer generation is supposed to have so much money. Well, some of them do, but not the people who've stood out in the streets demonstrating as a rule. They're out down fasting and doing that kind of stuff. You've got to have some money when you hit my age, because it's very unpleasant if you don't. And so that's why I'm out here talking to you about budgets and about not overspending. It's not that I have this moral compass that I'm right and somebody who overspends, you know, is morally lacking. What they're lacking in when they hit my age is money. And so the trick is to have enough to lead the kind of life you want to lead, because that's the aim of it all, isn't it? Okay, I think I got through one paragraph, but I think you got the issue. In this packet, there are a couple of articles about cash flow, and they in essence say what I just said to you. I think that's enough time on that. It's giving me a headache. I don't see why it wouldn't give you a headache. There's a financial checklist that we really don't have time to go through, but I recommend you can give yourself a headache looking at this. I recommend that you sit and ask yourself the questions on this and, you know, maybe not go through the whole list at once because it might be too disturbing, but do you have an adequate emergency fund? And of course, there'll be somebody who say, what's adequate? Well, if I told you what I was taught in financial planning school, that would make you very upset because it's too much. You know, for some of you, you don't have anything in an emergency. You have nothing. So for those of you who have nothing, get one day spending. For those of you who have one day spending, go for a week. For those of you who have a week, go for a month. And keep building it up. But don't suddenly say, oh my God, she said I have to have a year's worth of money. I'm going to go kill myself. There's really no point. Okay? So that's why I'm not going to, you know, because, you know, what people like me are taught is more than most of you have, unless you inherited it or something. And so just see again that as a process. You build it up. Okay? So there's more questions on here. Are you satisfied with how you spend money? Well, that's between you and your God. Have you thought about your three top financial goals and planned how you're going to achieve them? Are you funding a retirement plan? I've noticed that most people are not funding retirement plans who are freelancers. Or if they are, they're funding them at such a low level that they think eternal life isn't on them. But not only eternal life, eternal youth. Are you saving what you feel you should be? You know, so there's a bunch of questions. Here's one that most people say, oh God. Ready? Do you have an up-to-date will? I'm not even going to ask how many people here have wills, because I know my clients. Now, I almost got, I mean, I did jaywalk in the middle of West Broadway as I came over. I was, and how many of you remember Phil Oakes? Oh, come on. Some of you do. Come on. I'm going to start singing. I'm also a raging granny. Do any of you go to demonstrations? Have you seen the raging grannies? We're a bunch of women. I sing with the raging grannies. So there I am. There's a new Phil Oakes movie that just opened at IFC. It's only going to be on for very few. And I adored Phil Oakes. I just thought his songs were fabulous. So I'm marching across West Broadway. I ain't a marching anymore. And I almost got run over by a bicycle. It was dark. He didn't have any light on his bicycle. He's going, hum, hum. Well, who cares that a human being's going hum, hum in the middle of the street? I almost got killed by this guy. You know, you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you're going to need a healthcare proxy, is what the point of that story was. So you should get a will, and you should get a will and include in your will who's going to take care of your paintings or your photographs or your God knows what. You should have, you know, who's going to be, you know, your executor is one thing. Who's you going to be your artistic executor? Or are they just going to throw the stuff away? You know, you got to think about this. And you also should have a healthcare proxy. Now, what's a healthcare proxy, you might ask? We're going to put you on a ventilator. Oh, no, she's got a healthcare proxy. She does not want a ventilator. There's the person who is the voice, you know, of the person who says, no, no, no. For those of you who are in same-sex relationships, you better do something. So if I'll tell you a gossipy story. I just went to see The Illusionist, you know that thing, by Sylvain Chomet, and it's based on a story by Jacques Tati. Now, I used to live with somebody in Paris, and upstairs from us was Sophie Tadishev, who was Jacques Tati's daughter. And I like Sophie, and my partner and I, and she and whoever her partner was at that moment would socialize. And so Sophie took up with this Brazilian woman, and there was a kid, and, you know, the Brazilian woman was a singer or something, didn't have a penny. And Sophie goes off and gets breast cancer, and she dies without a will, leaving her partner with zits. So, for those of you who don't have a will, who have a relationship with somebody who you want to leave money to, God forbid you die. What happens? Please get a will. Because I'm still mad at Sophie. I never met the Brazilian woman. I don't care. This happens to so many people. So, do what you can. And if you can't afford to go get a will and you don't have anybody you want to leave whatever to, at least get healthcare proxies and living wills so that somebody, you know, so it's not, some of you don't speak to your parents. They get to take care. They get to be the person that they talk to in the hospital. Your best friend or your lover, unless you're married, are not the people the hospitals talk to. Yeah?
You just mentioned if you can't afford to get a will.
If you can't my understanding, I'm not an attorney. My understanding is those are called holographic wills. I think you got a big problem in New York State. I'm not a big believer in LegalZoom, you know, the guy on TV. But my sense is that a real will written with typed fonts, and that at least has a try at it, is better than nothing. But what I would do if you don't have any money, Sergio, how many people heard Sergio? Well, you missed a really good speaker if you didn't. And Sergio, among other wonderful people, are at Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts. Not only are they speaking programs, but what they do is they help artists who have no money. I don't know if they do wills, but if they don't do wills, do they do wills? Anybody?
They do, but they give it to their notary publics, and they have to, every question they have to then refer to another lawyer. So it takes forever because they have no money.
But it's free.
No, $50.
Free. Comparatively free. It's all comparative, I tell you. The other place you can go besides VLA, but I think that they're so over whatevered, is Legal Services for the City of New York. But I would try Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts first. And even though, so what if it takes a year to get one? You got one. You know? So anyway, I adore VLA. For any of you, I was very involved in 1987 with VLA. Anybody here, filmmaker, AIVF used to be a good organization. I don't even think it exists anymore. So the guy from AIVF called me up and said, we got a problem with taxes. And what they were going to do, it was another of these stupid things the Republicans do. They wanted all artists and writers to do inventories. And what an inventory is when you take all the materials that go into everything. And if you're a sculptor that does two sculptures a year, this isn't such a big problem. But imagine being a photographer. Just think about that or a poet. Excuse me? One page at a time, please. Anyway, I was the human being on it. There were we got eventually 72 organizations to sign on it, but that's how I got to know VLA, because we had it there and we fought this incredible fight, incredible, and we won. Artists winning anything was remarkable. We changed the tax law. It was remarkable. In truth, it was class, you know. I mean, we had Madame de Menil saying to, who was that guy, Lloyd Benson, who said, I knew John Kennedy, and you're no John Kennedy, to Dan Quayle. We had, you know, everyone know who Madame de Menil is? Schlumberger, the de Menil Museum, Dia Foundation. Madame de Menil says to Lloyd Benson, Lloyd, honey, I need my artist taken care of. Will you take care of my artists? I swear to God, it's a true story. And Lloyd Honey, Senator Benson, said, whatever he said, whatever he called her, he said, I'll do my best to take care of your artist. He was in her pocket. So we got the tax law changed. Anyway, God knows, why did I tell you that story? Anyway, so there's more of things on here. That's enough of this. Get a will, go to VLA. For those of you who have a problem about anything that you say you can't afford a lawyer, call VLA. They're fabulous. Some of you make too much money, in which case they'll refer you to somebody who will charge you money. But I love VLA. We all love VLA? Okay. All right. So I wrote an article this year, Common Freelance Mistakes, that's on there. Now, let's start talking about taxes. Oh, yawn. Okay, it's a very Gnostic world. There's two sides, you know, black, white. In this case, income and outgo. There's an article on the thing about income. I recommend that you keep track of all your income. Some of you will say, I rely on the 1099s. do not rely on the 1099s. Guess what? If they're wrong, how often are they wrong in your favor? Zero to none. I got a guy, he was doing work for George Soros in Georgia, over there somewhere. And I get this telephone call before Skype happened. And he's screaming. He got it 1099 forwarded for $130,000. He made 13, but the 1099 said 130. So we worked that out. They issued a new one. You should keep track of every invoice you send out. You should keep track of every check that comes in. Why? Because then at the end of the year, you can add up what you made from each person and check it against the 1099. And when there's a mistake, you call them up and say, here are my invoices, here are my checks. You did not pay me that. Okay? And some people don't send out invoices till October. I hope there's nobody here who feels that if you didn't get a 1099, you don't have to put the income in. Wrong. Okay, I have another question. And this is a shout out. We have to have some audience participation. I want to hear the amount, the lowest amount where you have to file a tax return. Oh, you're good. Anybody else? Hey, have you heard me speak before? How'd you know that? That was good. Because usually people say 10,000, something like that. God knows how I feel like you know so much. Maybe I better escalate this. $400 is the amount where you have to file. Why? Not for income taxes per se, but for self-employment tax. If you net $400, you have to pay, or more, you have to pay self-employment tax. That's why it's so important for freelancers to do their taxes. Because if you don't do your taxes, like you have a religious belief against it or something, and I have nothing against the war tax resistors. They're on Lafayette Street. I appreciate them. I've had them on my show. I personally don't believe in it myself. It's like some religious belief. But if you do, God bless you. You will file your taxes, and then you will have the IRS come suck the money out of your bank account like they did with Joan Baez and all those people. But most people, what they do is they get on the phone with me saying, I haven't filed my taxes in 10 years. Why? Well, I don't believe in atomic war. Really? Yeah. And did you put the money into an escrow account? No. Are you up a creek? Yes. So I believe you should file your taxes and then do your resistance elsewhere or within the tax resistance thing, but make sure you have your taxes. If you're prepared to go to jail for it, go with God. I'll fill out the tax returns. You can go to jail. Do whatever. And don't start with me. This business about the amendments and about the Constitution saying taxes are not legal, sorted on the right. You know, the right really does have a lot of harebrained ideas. They're running. Anyway, and now it's sort of like Mary Kay. It's traveled from white people to people of color, poor ones. And now there's so many people who listen to BAI who call up, say, Amendment number 6 says I don't have to pay my personal tax returns. Well, this breaks my heart. What's his name? Who's that guy who just went to jail for 3 years? What? Wesley Snipes. They all sound like Wesley Snipes. And Wesley Snipes was such an idiot. I knew a guy who spent 5 years in the federal penitentiary because he believed this shit. So if any of you believe this, the guy, Irwin Schiff, I think is his name, he, I think, is going to prison too. Just think about it this way, and please do not think I'm in favor of what the U.S. government does with their taxes. I was out walking around the Rhode Island, Nina and I went to the same school, so she'll appreciate this, the Rhode Island State House, me and this communist, and let me tell you, with Brown, I was the most left thing there. I was a Democrat. And this graduate student was a member of the Communist Party. Well, this was unheard of. Our school was run by the CIA. I mean, it was unheard of. Me and Frida, would walk around the State House protesting the incipient Vietnam incursion. Okay, I'm not in favor of it. But the point is, your life will be a misery if you get behind the eight ball with taxes. Or I could ask it a different way. Is there anyone here who have any friends who owe the IRS, who call up, say, oh, guess what, I owe the IRS $100,000 or $50,000. I'm having a great day. It doesn't happen like that. So you've got to keep up with your taxes. How do you do that? Does everyone here fill out a Schedule C? Does anyone here not know what a Schedule C is? Oh, do you have a learning curve? Okay, think table of contents. That's what a Schedule C is. It's where you put your freelance income and expenses. We'll get to it, and you can ask all the questions you want. And so the trick is, if you're freelancers, does anyone here thinking paying your taxes is voluntary? Because the system is not a voluntary system. With W-2s, you're supposed to have the money taken out as you earn it. Estimated taxes are what you're supposed to pay four times a year, I presume, many if you do this, right? Now, what?
If you have a certain amount of income.
Well, if you have no income, you don't have to. Well, then you have a small amount of estimated taxes to pay. So the trick to being a freelancer is putting aside a certain portion of your income every time it comes in. Now, it's such a grinchy way to live. I know, it's how it is. But what I recommend is, and the percentage can start at a lower percentage, like 20%, you know, you're young, maybe you make a fortune, but typically not. You get a check for $1,000, open an online account, deposit into 800 into one account, 200 into another. That's your tax account. Do not refer to it as savings. It is not savings. It's your tax account. And then every 3 months, you send in and there's different ways to do this, I'll go over them. You send in either the certain percentage of what you made during those 3 months, say 20%, so you send in $2,000, which you have carefully accumulated in that account, and then at the end of the year, you do your taxes, and you are not going to the accountant with your stomach like this. Now, what happens if you don't do the estimates? Stomach like this. How many people here have never had a stomach ache? When you go into tax hell, and what's tax hell? Tax hell is when you go to the accountant and you have $2,000 in your bank account, which you have to live on for the next month, and the accountant says, well, you owe five. That is tax hell. Anybody here, stomach doesn't go like that under such circumstances? The other thing that happens to people, and I don't care what color you are, give me whatever color there is. Everybody has the same gray tone as the blood goes out of their face. It's a grayish green color. Now maybe some Martians are like that at birth, but human beings who are healthy are not. And so this is why I recommend taking the Grinch approach, or as my brother would say, the Silas Marner approach. If you're careful, if you put aside, okay, so now what happens? Is that real for freelancers? Because some of you are going to say to me, I'm a freelancer. Sometimes I don't have any money. I can't pay the thing. Well, if you've done it this way, you will have the money in your account. But if you didn't make money for those 3 months, don't send it in. The other method, which is more common, is the one where you see last year that you paid, including self-employment tax, say $3,000 for whatever, or more or less, whatever. So then each quarterly divided between federal and state is $750. Now for freelancers, that's kind of hard, because it doesn't allow for the roller coaster. But one of the other methods are going to work for you, or some variants thereof. See what works for you. But I guarantee you, well, not to guarantee, that's an overstatement. My sense of things is that if people don't owe in April, they're happier. And the aim in this is to not want to vomit at the accountants. People get runs in my house. I mean, I keep Kleenex. I mean, it's not, what can I tell you? You don't, I have games for people to play. I have those Zen boxes that you can play with the sand. And you know, given my clientele, you should see what they do in these Zen sandboxes. But none of it is happy, I can assure you, if you owe a whole lot of money. Okay, so there's an article in here about what papers do I need to do my taxes. Well, you've got to keep track of all your expenses. So how do you keep track of your expenses? Does anybody here use QuickBooks? Oh, God. Now, Quicken is for personal finance. QuickBooks is over here. I am not asking you to do QuickBooks, okay? I didn't know how to use QuickBooks for years. Do you know how I learned QuickBooks? Video professor. Okay, does everyone here know what video professor is? Anyone here not know? I swear to God, video professor is at certain stations, on certain TV stations, when they run out of expensive advertisers, on comes this man who says, do you want to know how to use PowerPoint? Do you want to know how to use Word? We will send you a free CD, and you will learn the basics. And of course, it's four CDs, and you pay for the rest. So I got an Excel, no, I got the Excel CD, I got the QuickBooks CD, and I then paid for the whole thing, and I learned how to use QuickBooks. I think that's a great goal, which we'll go to another question, should you incorporate, because God, that's like, that pops up, that question. But for most of you, okay, anybody here know how to use an Excel spreadsheet? Good. Anybody here afraid of Excel? Okay, I have a clue for you. I don't know how to use Excel. I've been using it for years. I will tell you the key to Excel. You ready? There is a sigma, well, sort of a sigma. It's like this, sort of like the E with points, sort of an E. What that thing is to an E is sigma. How's that? Is that okay? I flunked Ivory Soap, just be nice. Anyway, the sigma is the key. It adds everything up. You pull the cursor, you put in these things, the numbers, and then you pull the cursor down over all the numbers you want added up to the line below it. You press that thing, it adds up. It is fabulous. You can do this, but if you can't do that, because I could tell you the other things. I could tell you how to subtract, too, but it's not quite as exciting. Just get a piece of paper. Now, how do you keep receipts? You know the magic to receipts? Now, some of you wear dresses that don't have pockets. Am I correct? I'm not going to ask you to identify yourselves. But if you do, then you're going to have to use a bag. But my key to receipts, my left pocket. I'm left-handed. Okay? Any receipt that I get when I'm outside goes into this pocket, this one. Now, maybe if you're right-handed, you can use this pocket or that pocket. But how do I keep receipts? I stick them in this pocket. Then any receipt that comes in the mail or comes via my printer goes into an envelope. I just did my taxes. It may be news for some of you. I hate to do taxes. You are not alone. I hate to do my taxes. They're pretty much done. I have all the receipts that I put in envelopes all year. I get a table. I put them in the categories that are on that list in that thing about list for artists things that are pretty much the same as that are on vitamin C, on Schedule C. And I match them. And then I put the checks, or the pictures of the checks, because they're not giving me the checks anymore. Then I take the credit cards. How many people in here think that the credit card statement is enough? Anyone think that? Because one of my clients, his father, who was an attorney, for those of you whose fathers and mothers are attorneys, I'm sorry. They are the source of a lot of wrong information. because this woman was being audited, and her father insisted that I was full of shit. I don't like being challenged. I don't like losing bets, especially to some father who is totally wrong. I said, wrong, wrong, wrong. You have to have a receipt for everything with a credit card. A credit card is not a receipt. It's simply an acknowledgement of payment. So you can't say that I went to Macy's and I bought an art supply, because you can buy other things at Macy's. Or you might have bought it for somebody else or something. You need a receipt. So you have to have the receipt, and you have to have the mode of payment. And usually on the receipt, it might give the credit card number. And so you have to, if you do it like I do it, like a maniac, you staple everything together, you add everything up. For you with QuickBooks, this is fairly easy because the work is done for you. For those of you who don't use Excel and just do it on paper, you have to just add up all this stuff category by category. Then you come to somebody like me, you pay them an egregious amount of money because you think you've done all the work, and it's probably true nonetheless. Then we stick it in the little boxes like expensive postal clerks, and you find out how much you owe. And that's what's doing your taxes. Okay? Very simple. It's laborious. And doing your taxes means you're filing on this Schedule C. Now, since most of you, I can't really, you know, cover the real basics. So you might want to come. I invite you, if you want to go hear the same stories again. I'm speaking at SVA on, you call me up, I'll tell you when. I'll invite you, and that's a little more basic, you know. Aren't you bored yet? Don't you have questions? Does anyone have a question? Okay, wait, I saw his hand first.
How long should you hold?
I'm so glad you asked that question.
I hear 3 years.
I wrote an article about that.
I
got so bored answering that question. How long should you keep your records? Okay, and in this packet is an article saying how long should you keep the records. Do you have the packet? Is it in there, Nina? You read it? Was it pretty? Did you like it?
I'm new in this country, I love this.
Oh, well, good. If you were old in this country, here it is. How long do I keep those papers? It varies is the answer. And the truth of the matter, there is no truth of the matter. A lot of things are gray. I just want to talk about grayness, on grayness. Everybody wants a very particular answer. We like X or Y. I like X or Y. I want to know when I ask an attorney or a doctor or an accountant, I want to get an answer. Don't we all? Well, there are lots of times when you can't give them. Typically, what's in that article, I mean, I, for instance, say you should keep everything. Keep everything because it's easier for 7 years. Because why do I say that? Because if you bought an apartment or a house, you keep that stuff until everything to do with that house, the improvements and stuff, till you sell it. But there's some accountants who just say 3 is enough. But I say you're going to have to keep the receipts and everything for assets. Now, there are such things called assets. An asset is something that lasts for more than a year, like a book, ostensibly, or a table, or a computer. And if you just throw away everything after 3 years and you get audited, and if you get audited after the third year, you're okay typically, except if they accuse you of fraud. So the answer, typically it's all right if you throw things away after 3 years. I wouldn't, because if you get audited for the year after, you don't have the purchase stuff for the preceding years, if that makes sense. I had a cameraman who, he's a successful cameraman, and he was audited, say, in 2005. He had to go back and get every purchase order for any of his camera equipment back to, I think, 1998 or 1999. And if he just threw everything out after 3 years, he wouldn't have had it. So my general answer is keep the stuff for 7 years and you won't have that problem. Okay? And that's just like a general answer. And then you... you're screwed.
So everything has to be for a year because
yeah, there used to be something called income averaging. Yeah. That went out in 1986. Yeah, no, that's gone. That's gone. And income averaging was, the assumption was that there were some people in the society that had real roller coaster incomes, you know, and like somebody who you know, look, how many people do you know that are one-shot wonders in the art world? Certainly in the book world, that exists a lot. You know, there's one bestseller, and if the person might not even be able to get a book contract after the second book. And they're, so that's what you're talking about, is income like this. There's no leveling. There's no thing like that anymore.
There is depreciation of equipment.
Yes, yeah, so?
So why can't there be appreciation?
If I wrote the rules, there'd be income averaging. The IRS has not called me up lately. Sorry. How many years can you file as an artist if there's no income if you're my client? Okay, we all know the Handel's Messiah. Okay? Forever and ever. Hallelujah. Think Vincent van Gogh. The IRS, there was this case, some of you weren't born when it happened, but it's still the reigning case. It was Gloria Churchman versus the U.S. 1976. Gloria was married to a wealthy man, and he paid for her in essence, and I forget what she did, sculpted or something. And she was in some museum. She never turned a profit. And so the IRS went after Gloria. And Gloria prevailed. And what came out of Gloria's little event, at that time you only had to make a profit in 2 out of 5 years. Now it's up to 3 out of 5 years, theoretically. But came out certain rules. You have to conduct yourself like a business. There's one of them is you have to show evidence that your professional help is in your field. And, you know, hey. No, but I swear to God, it's true. It's one of the things. So in other words, you've got to be accorded some professional status. You know, obviously having a show, obviously belonging to art things, being involved in the art world. You know, there are various things that show you're an artist. By me, most everyone who comes to me has a resume an arm long. They're really committed human beings. I have no problem. And I've never lost one. The only case that I know of that I was involved with that I lost is somebody who didn't want to pay me. That's a mistake. Well, it is. I do this for a living, you know. I don't lose this stuff, or at least I haven't yet. I mean, I'm also Jewish, so now I have to knock on, give me wood. I have to knock on something that's real wood. You know, because who knows, I might lose my next audit, but I've never lost a hobby loss. So this is years and years ago. There was this artist who had taken losses for years, and she had gone and taken a job in the commercial world, making very good money, but not being an artist. And she goes in and goes to the audit, and she has an epiphany at the audit. You know, it was like one of those moments. And he said, he started talking about something, and she said, wait a minute, I don't want those dollars that was a loss. I don't want them anymore. My money is, I'm making too much money. Taking losses all those years were like a grant. I won, I don't need it anymore. Which, I mean, for the IRS person, nobody has ever voluntarily given up like that. And she was happy and met her standards. But for most of you, don't worry about it. You know, most of you are living your lives. Now, who doesn't qualify? The Authors Guild used to send accountants to me, and I'd get these calls from some accountant from Greenwich, Connecticut, or someplace like that. I want to know about the Hobby Loss question, which is what, in essence, you were asking about. I said, oh, yeah, what do you want? You know, tell me the circumstances. Well, the CEO, or the wife of the CEO, wants to write a cookbook. Yeah, does she write? Well, no, but she wants to write, and there were two cookbooks that people, it was either Tuscany, you know, they always wanted to write the same cookbooks. And, you know, I mean, it was either, you know, the south of France or that nice little region. I mean, never Umbria. And I, So then I say, no, no. And they say, thank you. I will say that the person the Authors Guild referred to said no, no, because that's what I think. Those people, you can't, I mean, I might be paid a fortune to do it, but it wouldn't be likely I would be the accountant, nor would I want to have to defend it, because they're not really trying to make a living. What's really the desideratum? Are you trying to make a living? Now, for those of you who have an attitude about, wow, making my art's not a business, it's my calling. Well, this is not the Catholic Church. The IRS takes an opinion that you have to want to make a living, that you fail to make a living at it. Even they may not know who Vincent van Gogh is, but they believe in the notion that when you're dead, your stuff might be worth a lot, you know, or cut off your ear or something. But so it's not the biggest problem, but I mean, I've defended a lot of these. This is, you know, if you have to have a specialty in life, losing money artists are one of mine. And you know, the thing about the IRS is who's working at the IRS? That's where you really have to start. Anybody here, when you were little, used to say to your mother or father, gee, when I grow up, can I work for the IRS? Okay, raise your hands. Were you that kid? Well, the people who work at the IRS weren't that kid either. You know, they, most of them were...
I'm not leaving.
You're not leaving your what? Oh, that's the best excuse I've ever heard in my life. That was good. I want to say something about those of you who might represent yourself. It is very easy when you're scared to be arrogant and to be snotty. Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. You know, we allegedly have a Bill of Rights. Now, most people in this room have always been accorded respect. Some of you have not. Some of you have the skin color in this country that may not be accorded the greatest respect. IRS agents have to be treated with respect. Why? Number one, I come from the politics of everyone should be treated. I fail sometimes because I'm a shit, I'm arrogant, I'm all those things, and I'm snotty. But you go to the IRS, they are the judge, the jury, and the prosecutor all wrapped into one. Isn't that fair? Isn't that a nice system? Well, the truth is you have your avenues you can appeal, but why bother? The IRS people are human beings who, many of them come from different cultures. At this point, many of them do not speak such good English. Most of them are the first generation who went to college, and for me, you know, the people who work at the IRS, well, let me tell you one of my last encounters, and I haven't had so many audits in the last few years, so, but I've been doing this a long time. I see, everybody here know who Tim Geithner is? Anybody here like him? Anyway, never mind. So I walk into the, it's the one on 41st Street or wherever it is. No, 43rd Street, 43rd Street. And there's a picture of Tim Geithner. Now, our secretary, the treasurer, is a tax cheat. Do we all know that?
Yes.
Everybody here know that he's a tax cheat?
No.
He lied, he cheated, he worked, he was a tax cheat. Take my word for it. And he blamed it on the accountant, he blamed it on the weather. They didn't care, why should they care? They're, you know, they don't care. He's a tax cheat. I saw that and I got apoplectic. Now, I knew it was going to be there, and I also know that when I go to an audit, it's a performance for me. It's my game is within 30 minutes, if I don't get the life story of the agent, I know I'm going to have a hard time. I used to write novels. I get life stories. You can't do this. I get paid very well to do this. So I the guy comes down from, and I don't know, he was some ethnic or another. And I said, the big guy. And I said, I don't know what your politics are. And I'm going to tell you what mine are by something I'm about to say. I do not want what I am about to say to prejudice you against my client. But that makes me apoplectic. And I know you're not allowed to say anything because you could lose your job. But I am so pissed that I have to go fight for every goddamn thing with my client to show how honest he is. And I have to do it when the boss here is a tax cheat. Well, if you don't think I wasn't treated better by the IRS agent, because the IRS agent also feels each of those people, or at least in my experience, most of those people feel that they're doing a good thing. Because otherwise, to have to do that all day is disgusting. So you've got to treat them with respect and understand that most of the day they're faced with people who are lying to them. Many of them are cheating. So if you ever go to an audit, there's an article in the packet or on my website, how to prepare for an audit. And it means it. It's endless work, which is why I like people to do a lot of it when they do their taxes each year, because it's easier, even though it's more laborious and chances are you won't be audited. If you are, then you're prepared. And so if you give the stuff, if you give receipts, if it matches what's on your tax return, you walk out with a no change. Yeah? Tell me what your circumstances are.
It's not so much for me, but walking a couple of friends of mine, a studio space where they are using the equipment for their own work, but renting time to other artists to come in and use stuff.
Okay, you've asked like a question that really expands out stuff. No, but seriously. Well, the thing is, that leads to a question, should you be incorporated, should you be an LLC, right? Now, when this neighborhood was a nice neighborhood, I moved into it in 1968. I used to love Soho. I didn't used to walk down it like this. I mean, now you look in the windows and there's something, you know, whatever. Finelli's was an artist bar. Male artists. Women were only allowed if they were with a man. Never did a woman go in there by herself. So my image of Finelli's, with Mike Finelli, who had dyed black hair, was you'd go and there would be these vultures, otherwise known as lawyers, and the lawyer would sit down next to you and say, are you incorporated? And the artist would go, oh no, should I be? Oh yes. Oh, can you do that for me? Oh, yes. Now, it used to be that you could cheat much easier on a sub-S corporation. Now, is anybody here? Okay, I won't ask that question because I think the answer is I better explain. Now, you are all sole proprietors probably, right? You work for yourselves? That's a sole proprietor. You file a Schedule C. That's a sole proprietor. You are in business. That's a sole proprietor. If you do business in your own name, you don't need an EIN number, which is what you're asking about. Fine. If you open a KEO, which is an outmoded form of retirement plan, you need an EIN. I think you... my memory, what? If you open certain forms of bank accounts for retirement plans, you need an employer identification number. Because the question was, when do you need them? So I'll circle around that and talk about entity at the same time. So how do you get an EIN number? You go online and to irs.gov and you can get an EIN number. The question is, do you need it? But the real question for artists is, is being a sole proprietor enough? Well, if you haven't, and it's our Mr. VLA talk about this issue, because me and VLA, we have the same position. It was Bill Clinton's keep it simple, stupid. Okay? And that is, I unincorporate people. Because I think for most people, I think when you're netting about 150, 250 a year in a consistent basis, you should think about incorporating. But, you know, I make more money if you're incorporated. You have a lot more angst. So I like making more money, but not at the cost. I had two people in the other day, two new clients married to each other. They're incorporated because their accountant, who they're leaving, just told them to. And when I explained to them, it saved them nothing, caused them anxiety, and they weren't making any money. Why were they incorporated? People say liability. Well, the truth about everybody know what liability is? Okay? Liability? Mm-hmm. Okay? Everyone says you have liability. You don't have to worry about liability if you have a sub-S corporation. That's total nonsense. I come to your studio to look at a painting. I fall on my head. I'm going to sue the shit out of you because you left something on the floor. Beeswax on the floor. That's what you left? You left that beeswax on the floor. If you have a sub-S, you still have to pay an attorney. And I'll get around it. If you own the loft, I'll sue somebody who I can, you know, break the corporate veil with. So just being a corporation is not necessarily a serviceable thing. If you're making good money, it may be okay. Now, what's another form you can be? There are a lot of something called LLCs. LLCs are limited liability companies. It's a form that was used in South America and Europe, I believe, in the 19th century, and came over to this country when some law partnerships started using LLPs, which are limited liability partnerships, or LLCs. And why? Because when you sued a bunch of partners, if I sue you and you're a partner, you don't want any of his obligation. So it keeps it separate. For most of us, LLCs, the liability protections, and I'm not an attorney. I'm not pretending to be an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice. That's what you have to go hear at VLA. They give legal advice, but me and them, we agree. Actually, their position is that for most artists, you have to give personal guarantees anyway, so being an LLC is almost irrelevant. But if you're going to be anything, be an LLC, because it may offer some protections. Now, it's more expensive in the beginning because of an advertisement requirement, which was a lobbyist thing done by a friend of my Aunt Dickie's named Jerry Finkelstein, who used to run the Law Journal. His son was a guy named Andy Stein, who was a New York politician. And Mr. Finkelstein got this through because everybody had to put the ads in his journal. So to this day, you have to do advertising if you become an LLC. It sounds like, you know, fantasy, but that's what it is. So should you be an LLC? For most people, insurance is the answer. Okay. Let me just talk about insurance for a sec. I believe it's called risk management. I believe not only should you have health insurance, even if you're an alternative health person, I believe you should have insurance on anything you have a risk for. So those people that are renting out space, they better have insurance, because if a renter trips on the beeswax, they'll sue them. So not only do they need an EIN, not only will they probably be a partnership of some sort, and partnerships need EINs, but they should practice risk management and have insurance so that if somebody sues them, the insurance will pick up, at the very least, the legal fees. Even if they win, they'll have enormous legal fees. So it depends what entity you are. It depends what your needs are. As to the rest of us, use Social Security numbers. Okay? Has one more question? Anyone have one? Yeah. Well, we'll take two. So we'll do real quick. Okay?
In New York State, anytime you sell something, you are charged. If it's sold in New York City or state,
Sales tax. Yes.
So when it comes time to do taxes,
they're separate. They don't go on the same forms. You get to deduct the sales tax. You put the amount of sales tax you've collected into your gross, and then you subtract out the amount of sales tax that you sent off to New York State as an expense.
Do you need an EI?
They give you a separate sales tax number.
When you
need an EI? No, they give you a separate sales tax number when you start filing sales taxes. I think you better call up New York State sales tax and get their packet for every sale. If you're selling stuff, you should register with them and start filing sales tax. If you sell art, if you have a gallery, the gallery will do it for you. Okay, it's a whole parallel track, and it's a pain in the ass, but I recommend that you get on that track, because 10 years later, then you have to play catch up, and it's unpleasant. And a lot of artists don't know about sales tax. Last question.
Yeah, I would like to be better about budgeting, but my income is a roller coaster, so I don't know how much income I have, so I don't know how to budget. What is that?
Well, that's the problem. That's the one. That's why you should know how much you spend, and you should spend to your lowest year. At least that's my grinchy answer. Because if you spend to your highest year, and suddenly there's no income, you know, you should try to spend to your lowest year. I hope this is what you came out for. Thank you very much.
Thank you.